Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana Cuba, and NHK World Radio Japan. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Demonstrations in response to the murder of George Floyd have taken place in many countries around the world. Reports from New Zealand, Australia, Kenya, Berlin, Ireland, Paris, and London. These protests pointed out that racial injustice is in their own countries as well, and occurred for the most part without violence from demonstrators or police. A Deutsche Welle reporter was shot twice by police in Minneapolis, and more than 9,000 protesters have been arrested in the U.S. A Berlin sociologist speaks to whether these events will be a historical turning point or whether the elite classes will maintain social inequality. A Black American historian who repatriated to Germany responds to recent events in the U.S. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Huge marches are underway in New York, Los Angeles, and in Houston, Texas, George Floyd's birthplace. And these protests, they are resonating in other parts of the world. Thousands have been taking to the streets to show solidarity with the protesters while also turning the spotlight on injustice in their own backyards.
A symbol of pride, strength, and unity. In Auckland, New Zealanders perform the Haka, counting themselves one tribe with protesters more than 12,000 kilometers away in the U.S. The death of George Floyd has shocked many around the world, leading to calls for action. Perth on Australia's west coast, the same chant. The same cause, and an opportunity to highlight similar problems at home.
There's over 400 plus Indigenous deaths in custody that are not being investigated or any further, so that is a huge issue, and everyone keeps saying, oh, Australia is so different, but it's not really, and so that's what we're here to talk about and just start a conversation.
There was a smaller gathering in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, but voices rang out against the abuse of power.
No more killings! No more killings!
We're here to express that solidarity with the American people, but to also say that white supremacy is a cancer that is also affecting us.
Demonstrators also assembled in the German capital, Berlin, for a third straight day at various landmarks.
Call it out! Just say something!
A memorial depicting George Floyd has emerged on a former section of the Berlin Wall. In Ireland, protesters marched from Dublin city centre to the US embassy, where they took a knee. Unlike the US, protests abroad have been largely peaceful, despite concerns over breaches of physical distancing guidelines. Amid the global pandemic, injustice is also being highlighted as a threat to life.
Thousands of people in Paris defied a ban on large gatherings to protest the 2016 death in police custody of Adama Traoré, a young Frenchman of Malian origin, and to express as well their anger at that country's racism. Many of the demonstrators carried signs with slogans linked to the Black Lives Matter movement in the U.S. The demonstration went off peacefully until police used tear gas to disperse the crowd after protesters pelted them with projectiles. Well, here in Germany, the country's foreign minister says journalists must be allowed to do their job safely when reporting on the protests in the United States. Heiko Maas's comments came after Minneapolis police twice shot at a DW correspondent with rubber bullets. He was one of a number of reporters in the U.S. who have had their work limited by police during the protests. German foreign minister also saying peaceful protests were, quote, understandable and more than legitimate.
Protests over Floyd's death are now in their ninth day. The flare-ups of violence that marred previous demonstrations, it has dwindled somewhat. More than 9,000 protesters have been arrested across many U.S. cities, defying curfews, saying they want to take a stand for change. When you consider history, there are moments when history seems to take an abrupt turn. Consider the collapse of communism or the Arab Spring, the recent Me Too movement. And what about the killing of George Floyd? His death has triggered a global wave of protests. To talk about that, I'm joined tonight by Marcus Kinchev, a sociologist who specializes in criminology and social movements. He is with Berlin's Free University. It's good to have you on the program. You know, we're seeing these mass protests, not only in America. Do you think this has the makings of an international movement, or is this another flash in the pan moment with a hashtag?
Oh, that's really difficult to say. I'm afraid I don't have a crystal ball. It can go either way. Either the protests will fizzle out, or they may sort of keep their momentum and may eventually kind of, you know, result in meaningful, substantial change.
You say meaning substantial change. That implies that the elites who have the power, that there will be a change in the power constellation as we know it. Are there any signs that we can see now that would suggest that we will see a lasting change in that power constellation?
No, at the moment, unfortunately not. I think so far we've seen that elites have sort of pretty much dug in, particularly in the United States, where the president himself has not reached out to protesters and has not even kind of promised any token reforms. But you're absolutely right. What meaningful, substantial change would require would be a redistribution of resources and opportunities within society. And that's not just in the United States, but in many European societies as well.
In London, thousands of protesters also gathered today to honor the life of George Floyd. Black Lives Matter, they organized the rally to draw attention to what they say is the systemic racism which harms people of color in the UK.
Speaker's Corner in London's Hyde Park, a meeting point for demonstrators over the years. This time, they gathered to draw attention to injustices against black people sparked by the death of George Floyd in the US. Then the crowd marched through the city, stopping at the Prime Minister's office and residence on Downing Street. They did not receive an audience from Boris Johnson, although he addressed the matter in Parliament.
I think what happened in the United States was appalling. It was inexcusable. We all saw it on our screens. And I perfectly understand people's right to protest what took place. Though, obviously, I also believe that protests should take place in a lawful and reasonable way.
Currently, the largest gatherings allowed in the UK are limited to 6 people because of the coronavirus threat, which has been devastating for the country. That rule was not enforced at this rally, although the event comes at a time when Britain is easing lockdown restrictions.
Earlier, we spoke with Edna Bonham, a U.S.-born historian of anti-colonialism and activist and writer, as well as a research fellow at the Max Planck Institute of History and Science here in Berlin. She's been writing extensively about discrimination against black people. We asked her how she is personally experiencing the recent events in the U.S.
To be honest, this week has felt like a century. I was born and raised in apartheid America, and I'm angry like most black Americans, mostly because what happened to George Floyd, what happened to Breonna Taylor, what happened to Trayvon Martin, Sandra Bland, and so many others is because of the intimate connection and knowledge we have about how the United States and most of the world is unjust to black people. And it begins with the history of African slaves who came in 1619, but it continues and it continues to enrage us when we witness how our lives don't matter to the police state, don't matter to the government. And the rage that we see and the protest that we see is a byproduct of centuries of holding on to and bearing this injustice.
And that was Edna Bonham speaking with us.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. The Cuban foreign minister responded to U.S. State Department accusations that his country does not fight terrorism, specifically in Colombia. Political figures in Colombia reject and condemn the arrival of 800 U.S. Army troops, allegedly to fight against drug trafficking. A Peruvian leader says that the U.S. State Department list was part of a growing escalation and intervention in Latin America. Iran announced a willingness to send more ships with fuel to Venezuela if requested. Amnesty International revealed how hundreds of American police forces have received training from Israeli police, military, and intelligence services. China has criticized the U.S. for severing ties with the World Health Organization, UNESCO, and the Paris Climate Agreement. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Cuban Foreign Minister Bruno Rodriguez stated that his country has an absolute and categorical commitment to act against terrorism. There are plenty of reasons to doubt that the U.S. government can make such a categorical statement about its position on terrorism, Bruno Rodriguez said on his Twitter account. In a statement published on Monday, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs said that as a country that has been a victim of terrorism, Cuba deplores any manipulation and political opportunism in dealing with such a sensitive issue as terrorism. The foreign ministry stressed that Cuba invariably maintains its support for the peace of the South American nation of Colombia as guarantor and venue for the peace process with the Liberation Army of Colombia, the ELN, and previously with the former Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, EP, the FARC-EP. This list of countries that has been released by the State Department last week is a unilateral, arbitrary, and without any basis, authority, or international support, reiterated the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, referring to the list by the U.S. State Department of countries that supposedly do not fight terrorism. Political figures in Colombia, along with activists, continue to reject and condemn the arrival on Monday of the U.S. Army's 1st Security Force Assistance Brigade in the South American nation of Colombia, allegedly to help in the fight against drug trafficking. Former Senator Piedad Córdoba ironically tweeted that if 800 U.S. soldiers are coming for counter-narcotics operations in the region, they should start with the case of drug trafficker René Hernández, who financed a presidential campaign. For his part, former President Ernesto Samper warned that allowing foreign troops into Colombia without the Senate's authorization could lead to disciplinary and criminal proceedings against President Iván Duque and his defense secretary for ignoring jurisprudence of the Constitutional and State Council. Also, Ernesto Samper said that the country's Congress is the only authority with the power to legally permit the presence of foreign troops on national soil. Peruvian political leader Álvaro Campana declared that the inclusion of Cuba on a list of countries that does not cooperate with the fight against terrorism is part of an escalation by the United States against Latin America. According to Campana, the Secretary General of the New Peru Movement, this measure is part of the interventionist and escalation of the Trump administration in Latin America in the context of the crisis that the North American country is experiencing. In statements to Prensa Latina News Agency, the Peruvian leader said that Washington uses nations like Colombia, where human rights are violated every day, social leaders are murdered, and any peaceful solution to the armed conflict is crushed, these movements in Colombia to intervene in other countries in the region. The Peruvian leader said that this is in addition to the crisis being experienced by the United States due to the ineptitude of its government in the face of the coronavirus pandemic and now the outbreak of major mobilizations throughout the country caused by racist violence. As part of the context of the crisis, the Secretary General of the New Peru Movement mentioned the proximity of elections in the United States, in the face of which the Trump administration seeks to convey a supposed image of strength that in reality is much weaker. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman, Abbas Mossavi, on Monday announced the country's willingness to send more ships with oil to Venezuela if the government of President Nicolas Maduro requests such aid. He said, "We will send more fuel to Venezuela if it needs it." At a press conference in Tehran, he said that Iran's fuel shipment to Venezuela is in response to a number of legitimate international trade agreements and that the U.S. government has threatened to take action against these agreements. Both countries, Iran and Venezuela, have been subjected to a number of rounds of sanctions by Washington. The spokesperson for Iran's foreign ministry said that the United States cannot tolerate two countries cooperating with each other. They are used to harassing and breaking the law. Amnesty International has revealed how police forces from a surprisingly wide expanse of the United States have been receiving training from Israeli forces and services, warning that the violence being exercised by U.S. law enforcement has come to match Israeli brutality. The UN-based human rights group said that the American peace members have been either traveling to the occupied territories to receive training or have been trained inside the United States by Israeli forces. It said Israeli police, military, and intelligence services have been providing training to American forces on such issues as crowd control, use of force, and surveillance. It identified the recipients as Baltimore law enforcement officials, along with hundreds of others from Florida, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, California, Arizona, Connecticut, New York, Massachusetts, North Carolina, Georgia, and Washington State, as well as the D.C. Capitol Police. Besides those traveling to the occupied territories, thousands of others have been receiving training from Israeli officials in the United States. Amnesty International says that the training is either taxpayer-funded or privately funded, as is the case of the money that has been offered for the process since 2002 by the international far-right Jewish organization, the Anti-Defamation League, and the American Jewish Committee's Project Interchange, which arranges for visits to the occupied territories by U.S. citizens. China has criticized the United States for its decision to sever ties with the World Health Organization, accusing Washington of pursuing a selfish and unilateral policy. During a press briefing in Beijing, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhuo Lijian said that the United States has become addicted to quitting groups and scrapping treaties. Zhuo said that the response from the international community has shown that many disagree with the U.S. withdrawal from the WHO. The international community generally disagrees with U.S. acts of selfishness, evasion of responsibility, and undermining of international cooperation against the pandemic. Since U.S. President Donald Trump took office in 2017, the United States has quit the UN Cultural Agency, UNESCO, cut UN funding, and announced its withdrawal from the UN-backed Paris Climate Agreement, as well as the Iran nuclear deal.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's web stream worked well this week at their website, radiohc.cu, and their podcast links are fixed and working fine. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. I'm happy to report that Radio Exterior de España, or Spanish National Radio, has been allowed back in the studio and will begin covering the world next week. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Almost all the funding this freely distributed program receives is from individual listener donations. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help me keep it going like listeners to KMUD in Garberville did this week. We will conclude with NHK Japan. In Tokyo, COVID-19 infections are increasing, but the gradual economic reopening will continue. City officials in Wuhan, China tested all 10 million residents in 19 days and found no cases with active symptoms. India and countries in South Asia are beginning to ease COVID restrictions, even though infections are rising. Experts in Japan are urging caution with face masks as summertime temperatures rise. In Hong Kong, plans are underway to introduce the controversial security legislation, and a ban on gatherings has been extended. NHK Japan.
We start here in Tokyo. Officials have issued an alert after confirming the highest daily tally of coronavirus infections in weeks. The governor says it's a way of urging residents to remain cautious, but does not alter the plan to gradually reopen the economy.
We want to continue resuming social and economic activities while preventing the spread of COVID-19. We'll need cooperation from all residents.
Officials reported 34 new infections in the capital on Tuesday, the first time the number has topped 30 in about 3 weeks. The increase comes 1 week after the central government lifted the state of emergency for the Tokyo metropolitan area. The prefectural government had begun easing restrictions that had prompted many businesses to close. Turning to China, city officials in Wuhan say they found no cases of COVID-19 with symptoms after testing almost the entire population. Wuhan is where the coronavirus first emerged. Officials carried out a massive testing campaign for 19 days through Monday. They said they found just 300 carriers out of about 10 million people, none with symptoms. The testing campaign was launched after 6 people living in the same housing complex were found to have contracted the virus. Officials said they made the testing more efficient by mixing samples from different people into single tests. Wuhan was under strict lockdown for about 2.5 months until early April. Countries in Southeast and South Asia are beginning to ease restrictions on travel and economic activities, even though coronavirus numbers are still rising. India is easing its stay-at-home order that's been in place since late March. Restrictions are also being lifted on retail and manufacturing sectors. However, infections have yet to decline in India. The daily number of new cases in that country is more than 8,000. For areas with high rates of infection, the government will keep its stay-at-home order in place and subways closed. The Philippines is easing rigid restrictions on public transportation in the capital Manila and surrounding areas. But infections have yet to drop, even after a lockdown of 2.5 months. Thailand is continuing to ease restrictions in phases on Monday. It's allowing movie theaters and other indoor facilities to reopen, along with massage parlors. Experts in Japan are calling on people to practice caution while wearing face masks in the summer, when the risk of heat stroke will be high. They say wearing masks could elevate breathing and heart rates. On Monday, the Japan Association for Acute Medicine and 3 other doctors' groups proposed ways to prevent heat stroke while wearing a mask, a new normal for many people in the coronavirus era. They advise plenty of rest and hydration, and taking off the mask when appropriate and able to maintain social distance from others.
It could be difficult to distinguish between heat stroke patients developing a fever and coronavirus patients. It may take emergency responders time to find hospitals to take them in.
Ventilating rooms is an important way to lower the risk of infection from the coronavirus. But since turning the air conditioning off and opening the windows can cause a spike in the room temperature, the groups recommend keeping the curtains drawn. light exercise at home or easy walking is helpful in acclimatizing to the heat, they added. The experts also stressed the need to keep an eye out for the elderly who lives alone. And now to Hong Kong and the latest on China's plans to introduce controversial national security legislation. The territory's chief executive has promised full support for the step. Carrie Lam made the comment on Wednesday during a visit to Beijing with the heads of Hong Kong's judiciary and police departments. She briefed media after talking with Chinese Vice Premier Hong Zhang for 3 hours. Hong told her China would push ahead with the legislation designed to crack down on anti-government protests in Hong Kong.
When the one country concept, the sovereignty issue, is now undermined by the events that we have seen in Hong Kong, this advocacy of independence and even violence verging on terrorist activities, the central government has no alternative but to take action.
Well-known pro-democracy activists joined on an online news conference held by the Foreign Correspondents Club of Japan.
National security law would be a total destruction of the one country, two systems of Hong Kong, and also total destruction of the freedom and political rights that Hong Kong people are enjoying.
The campaigners vowed to keep up the protest movement even under strong pressure from the government. They also called on the international community to speak out against the security legislation. Government authorities in Hong Kong are extending a ban on gatherings of more than 8 people, claiming it's part of efforts to stop the spread of the coronavirus. The ban was originally due to expire on Thursday, but the government said it'll be extended for 2 weeks until June 18th. Pro-democracy groups accused the government and police of using coronavirus prevention measures to suppress free speech. On Monday, Hong Kong police announced they were banning an annual vigil commemorating the 1989 student-led protest in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. It's the first time the event has been halted. Protesters were also planning to hold rallies to commemorate the start of mass demonstrations in Hong Kong 1 year ago. Hong Kong has kept the coronavirus outbreak under control for more than a month, other than infections among visitors from abroad. Schools started reopening in stages last week.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They have altered their schedule and format and are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 5975, 7245, and 11970, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast. Get a global perspective. You could use a shortwave radio at home. It's simpler than you might think, except that you'll get interference from your electronic devices. If you use the internet, listening globally is easier and noise-free. See the links at this program's website. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thank you for listening.